It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. We're live here today on November 17th, and if you're listening, you could also check us out by video. We are live streaming video today, so you can take a look at us here at the Gary Neal Studio. It's All About Food. And it is a live call-in show. If you have any comments or questions, you can call 1-888-874-4888. I also take email during the week at info@realmeals.org. Okay, so we have a really yummy show today. I like yummy shows. And my guest is Chef Fran Costigan. She's a native New Yorker and the queen of vegan desserts. She's an internationally recognized culinary instructor, author, consultant, recipe developer, and the pioneering vegan pastry chef who marries healthy eating with sumptuous taste. The Fran Factor is her unique ability to transform traditional desserts into modern, healthful, and luscious vegan desserts that satisfy vegans and omnivores alike. And there's so much more you can learn about Fran at her website, FranCostigan.com. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well,
I hope my head will fit through the door when I get home.
And I left so much out. So that's just a sweet taste. Yeah. Okay. So it's holiday time. Thanksgiving's coming up and all the big winter holidays. And the thing that's very important for the holidays are our sweet treats, the cakes, the cookies, the desserts. And you certainly have a lot of great recipes. I'm going to show the cookbook here for those who are listening. More great, good, dairy-free desserts. All vegan.
All vegan. It's quite interesting. Karen is holding the new cover to my same book. Was always vegan. Everything I do is vegan. For 23 years, I've been doing vegan desserts. I was trained as a traditional pastry chef, but I did switch over. In any case, vegan has become a real, more than a trend, actually a positive marketing term and a cuisine. So my publisher decided to put an all vegan sticker on the book, just in case anyone wasn't clear.
Right. Well, you know, we look for that label.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and it's so nice to see it up front rather than having to look at all the fine print.
Well, that's right. I mean, 23 years ago, we weren't quite sure, the schools that I teach at were not quite sure how to market my class. In order to get the larger population in, we were thinking, well, do we say dairy-free? Because the vegans know that means likely vegan, or to get a wider audience. But now people are, you know, vegan has become, well, the Power Vegan article not too long ago,
right? That was a funny, funny article, and I'm really glad that it came out. What was it, in Business Week?
It was in Business Week, or the new Bloomberg. Yeah, it was terrific.
Well, it was great because it talked about President Bill Clinton and Steve Wynn, the entrepreneur who made Las Vegas what it is today. And I think Mike Tyson was included in that group.
Mike Tyson was included, and I don't know his name, but the founder of Twitter.
Right. I didn't know. He's vegan, too?
He's vegan, too.
Wow.
Is his name Biz?
Yeah, I don't know. But what's amazing is more and more people in the mainstream are realizing that this plant-based diet of whole foods, I'm not talking about Coke and potato chips, which are also vegan. I'm talking about whole foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, raw nuts, and seeds. More and more people are realizing that this is the path to a quality life, a long, healthy, happy life of feeling good. And like We heard Bill Clinton say, I think it was on CNN, he wants to be around for his grandchildren.
That's right. That's right. It is not about giving up. It's about getting. I am not deprived at all. And when you and I are together outside the studio, we talk about, well, it always comes back to food, doesn't it? I mean, when I changed my diet, I felt that there were so many more foods available to me. And you made a really, I think, key point about the plant-based vegan diet, which is, I am not a my business is sweets. I am definitely here to make sure you get your dessert or your birthday cake
dessert.
Or your wedding cake. You're just dessert. But I'm not a candy bar vegan. I eat a Whole Foods plant-based diet. I did not take out all the animal foods and then put in soda in its place. I mean, today you can get organic vegan Jelly Bellies. That's not that's not a way to feel good at all. And this philosophy is in my desserts. I want my desserts that happen to be 100% vegan to taste absolutely delicious. As good as, if not better than, the traditional counterparts. And oftentimes they are better because the ingredients I use are really high quality.
High quality.
They certainly taste like sweets, but they are not over-sugared, so the flavors really come through, and there are beautiful textures.
Well, so many people today are concerned about weight. We have this huge obesity problem. There's a pun in there somewhere. Huge obesity problem.
Oh, I got it. I see.
And so here's the thing. We're not telling people that you can't have delicious cakes and cookies and treats. The thing is, there's balance where we're not putting in our mouths all kinds of junk, all kinds of low-quality food on a regular basis. The thing is, when there's a celebration, a festivity, the holidays coming up, there are lots of wonderful quality treats that we can have. And the great thing about this diet, I feel, it's not a diet. It's a lifestyle. And when you're eating healthfully all the time, you can allow yourself treats. And you don't put on pounds.
Absolutely.
It's not amazing either. I want to say it's amazing, but it really isn't. It makes so much sense.
It isn't amazing. I struggled with my weight. I was never extremely overweight, but my weight fluctuated. And the sweets, whether it was a box of cookies or cake, I really grew up on canned and boxed and so on. I was finished when there was nothing left, but I wasn't satisfied. When people ask me about my desserts, well, do you do anything that's no fat or low fat? No fat. Not a cake. I mean, it's a big fat lie, really, to say anything is no fat, because there's fat in
everything.
I use quality fat, and I use just enough to give me the texture. If a person really is on, you know, medically is told to eliminate fat from their diet, there are some naturally fat-free and no added sugar desserts that are appropriate and delicious. Baked apple, for example. You can have a delicious baked apple. A wonderful Canton.
Poached pears. Oh, my goodness.
You know, I do more and more of that. But there was, if you remember, Snackwell cookies was the first reduced fat or low fat, no fat. You know, the labeling laws are so confusing. I get mixed up sometimes thinking about what it was. In order to do that in a baked good, you need to use twice as much sugar. That's not so good for us. And people weren't satisfied. They were eating the whole box of cookies and expecting to lose weight on it. You know, people say to me, you do desserts all the time. Well, yeah, I make desserts every day. And I take little teeny tastes. But I like to have something sweet every day. I'm not heavy. Someone said to me yesterday, you're so svelte and you're so svite. I don't know how svite I am.
You are.
But I'm not overweight. I eat a terrific plant-based whole foods diet. You know, I drink my green drinks, and if I have a day where I'm really testing a lot of new recipes, I'm certain it's for sure that I'll have miso soup or some umi plums. I know how to balance things, but You really, you know, this all started for me when I changed my diet, and I did not, you know, for a short time, I really did demonize anything sweet.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes you have to do that just to recalibrate your tongue.
Just to recalibrate, right. I mean, I had been working in a really white sugar, butter, cream kitchen, making overly sweet, overly greasy things that people loved. And I had liked at the time, but I wasn't feeling well. But when my son said, "Mom, you're please, my birthday's coming up. You cannot put a candle in a baked sweet potato. I cannot go to school that way." I really had to rethink. And that's true. And I started thinking about it. Well, of course, people have birthdays, weddings, engagement parties, and around the holiday table. Thanksgiving is coming up, as you said earlier. And in particular, that brings with it its own stuff.
Like the turkey.
Like the turkey. So if you can offer dessert, if people know that there is going to be something delicious that everyone can enjoy, it smooths over a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. This is not about deprivation. My diet, 100% vegan, is the furthest thing from deprivation I can think of.
Well, I know when you bring treats to an event, and it can be any kind of event, in an office or at a party, and it doesn't have to be a vegetarian event, just a normal, mainstream, regular event. You bring cookies or cakes and pies, nobody's thinking what's in it. They're like, oh, yeah,
that's
and they
right.
love it.
That's right. Isn't it interesting?
They get so
excited. The right thing to say. I mean, even in a business meeting.
I mean, I think what's in it, but
well,
most people don't.
Well, I do, too. That's for sure. And we do when we're together. But it's cookies, cupcakes, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. I've got new moon pies that are unbelievable, by the way. I was thinking about, well, what are some of the holy grails of vegan desserts that are more difficult to make using wholesome ingredients? And I have a new graham cracker. That's so good. And now, of course, we've got vegan marshmallows available. And you know that I care very much about using fair-traded sweeteners and
right.
chocolates.
No slavery in our chocolate.
No slavery in our chocolate. People, when I bring that up in class or mention it to a client, there are still people who aren't aware.
Most people.
Certainly.
Please. Yeah.
But once they know.
It's chilling. So in the Ivory Coast, where most of the cocoa is harvested, still today, children are used, children that are slaves, to harvest the cocoa. And so many of the main brands today, like Hershey's,
yeah.
use cocoa from the Ivory Coast. And so that's what we mean by slavery in your chocolate. So the question is, do you want to support that? And there are so many wonderful brands of chocolate today that are organic and fair trade that are slave-free. Fair trade is especially good because it means the people that are growing the beans for the cocoa are able to get a wage where they can feed their families and educate their children. And don't you want to support that? And the chocolate tastes better.
The chocolate does taste better. Virtually all fair trade, nearly all fair trade, is organic. Cocoa is a heavily sprayed crop. Now, at best, it's hard work. Harvesting cocoa beans means going into the jungle,
mm-hmm.
and it's hot, and it's there. It's very hard work, but people should be paid for it. I mean, there is karma, I feel. I'm sitting here talking to you.
Right.
It's an accident of birth for me, lucky me. And it's the same with sugar. There's a link on my website to a trailer for a film called The Price of Sugar that I recommend people look at. Now, Paul Newman was the narrator for this film. One would think it would have made it to the movie theaters, but the sugar barons have very deep pockets.
That's right.
They don't want people to know. And in the trailer that you can see, theprice of sugar.com, you see, in this case, it's Haitians, actually, in cages, adults.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that in my coffee. I don't want to carry that around. But there are so many delicious chocolates now and really excellent sweeteners that are made organically, which means our health, it's better for us, it's better for the growers, and it's certainly better for the environment. And as Karen said, we don't want slavery in our chocolate. Ocean Robbins wrote a great piece for the Huffington Post right around Halloween about fair trade.
Oh, I got to check that out.
Yeah.
Ocean Robbins, of course, is the son of John Robbins, a dear friend of mine who founded EarthSave, an organization I work with for a long time, and he was the heir to the Baskin-Robbins throne, which he gave up. And Ocean, his son, is just incredibly socially minded. He's won a number of awards for his great work. Really a great person. I really need to link to his Huffington Post
article.
Look for
it. He did a great job of explaining it, and it was really it was a compelling read.
Well, here's the thing. People always feel frustrated about the economy, about politics, about all the things that are going wrong with the world. And I keep saying, be the change you want to be, and support what you believe in with your dollar. Now, organic food can be more expensive. It doesn't have to be in all cases.
That's right.
But in some cases it is, and people will go, oh, it's so expensive. But the thing is, especially when it comes to sweets, we don't really want to be eating a tremendous amount of cookies and cakes, but what we do want, when we want them, I think, they should be high quality, and so it's okay to spend a little more, especially if you're not buying as much. Stop buying the giant containers of Coke and all of the poor junk foods, and you'll have lots more money in your budget left over for really quality desserts.
That's right. And it's satisfying on every level. Your pocketbook will, your wallet will be happy. And when you have a smaller piece will definitely satisfy you when you're eating something that's quality and made with the ingredients it should be. And, you know, fair trade chocolates are so widely available now. I saw some at Trader Joe's yesterday that were really moderately priced.
Mm-hmm.
And delicious.
One thing that I learned from you is to make the mini cupcakes.
Yes.
And I love the portion size. It's just maybe a bite or bigger than a bite. And when I throw dinner parties, I always like to make, I go a little nutty. I cook for days. I make four or five desserts. And everybody wants a taste of everything.
Yes.
And so you're cutting all of these big pieces of everything, and it's really, people can't fit it in, and so just these small bite-sized tastes, I'm making a lot more of them, and you can make like 200 little cupcakes.
You can make a lot. What I like to teach people is certainly making desserts is more precise than making savory food. If, you know, I say my recipes are really, really well tested, and I feel like I've taken someone's hand when I go in the kitchen and is like, turn on the lights, preheat your oven, make sure there's an oven thermometer, put the rack in the right place, measure really carefully using the right measuring utensil. You want things to taste absolutely delicious. Your time is valuable. These ingredients are not inexpensive, and it becomes a meditation for me. But I observed when I was serving desserts at parties, big parties, little parties, that, as you said, people want to taste everything, and there was a lot of waste or people being overly full.
Mm-hmm.
When you go around town and you go into the markets and you see what's considered a standard size cupcake or muffin,
obscene.
I want to say, hello, friend. I just had one. I said, well, actually, I think you had three, because they're so big.
Mm-hmm.
It's a turnoff to me. So I make actually very, very small minis, and then what my small standards, which is about a 2-bite cupcake, and my standard cupcake is probably about 3/4 of the size of an average standard. It works really well at a party. So I like people to understand, well, the chocolate cake to live for example, which is, I get more mail about this cake and more requests for this cake than anything else. It's the cover of my book. It is shown as a 3-layer cake. The 2-layer version is, I encourage people to measure their batter and make a note in your book. So if you know that the batter for that cake, one recipe, is 5.5 cups, You know that that's 2 9-by-3-inch pans, 1/2-sheet pan, or about 200 minis. So you can cut it down, you can scale it up. It's a very handy thing to know.
Mm-hmm.
And for Thanksgiving, for one of my clients, I'm going to be making small size chocolate cupcakes and coconut cupcakes. You know, I brought them to her as a gift to taste, thinking, well, you know, they're little, but it's just a little bite of a gift. And she said, boy, that size was just perfect. Mm-hmm. We loved it.
It is such a perfect size.
Yeah.
I was at the gala in almost a year ago now for the Physicians Committee of Responsible Medicine. Mm-hmm. It was outside of Malibu. And there was this dessert bar. And it's crazy as a vegan when you're at a place where the dinner from beginning to end is just amazing. But there were so many different desserts, and they were all that tiny size.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
I think it's great. I was at a premiere this week, which was quite the opposite. Nothing was vegan. Maybe the jelly beans were vegan. But the dessert bar stretched, it looked like, for miles, and everything was big. And that's what I thought. I thought people are going to take one or two bites and just leave it on their plate. What a waste.
Mm-hmm.
What a waste.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so when you're making desserts for a holiday, think about the mini cupcake size.
Think about the mini cupcake size. I will probably be doing, pumpkin pie. You can do individual pies, or you can just, you know, take a 9 or a 10-inch pie and cut smaller slices. I like to make small pumpkin muffins.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking in your cookbook right now. And there is
a very nice light pumpkin muffin. If you don't, you know, and nearly all of my desserts can be made. The muffins, the cupcakes, the cakes, and the frostings, almost without exception, can be made and frozen, so you can make them ahead, or certainly most of it ahead, and then have them. If you don't want to use your oven, I happen to love to make a slump.
You know, I never heard of that, and I read about that in your cookbook.
Really? That is a really old dessert from the time
can
of the colonists.
That?
Yes,
yeah.
Some people call them a slumps, and some people call them grunts. Why? This is a fruit dessert and a soft biscuit topping, and the biscuit actually steams, so your fruit topping contains more liquid than a crisp or a cobbler by a lot. So you cook your fruit topping. For this time of the year, I'd make a cran pear, and that would be really nice after a holiday meal. It's a nice, there's a tartness and a sweetness, but not too sweet, with maple syrup, which is really appropriate for the holidays, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a soft biscuit dough that goes on top of the hot filling. And then you cover the top, you cover the pot. This is on top of the stove, very tightly. And don't peek, because the biscuits are actually steaming. So I like to look at desserts historically. I mean, there are some desserts that were vegan by accident, if that's what you want to say, wartime desserts, depression desserts. And you have this wonderful dessert that's ready when you're finished with your meal. Your oven is busy maybe with your sides and your mains and all that, and you didn't have to. But some people said that they heard the biscuit dough grunting, and other people said, well, no, the biscuit dough slumped into the fruit. I love these. I love to find this out. Same thing with a buckle. Why is something called a fruit buckle? Because, you know, the colonists, the settlers, didn't want to waste anything. They had apples. They had fruit that wasn't perfect or was left over, and they were apple butter that was made from apples going bad.
Oh, wow.
Slapped it into some kind of a dish, took bits of pie dough, rolled it out, put it on top of the fruit, and then cut it so that it looked like cobblestones. A Betty. Mm-hmm. I have a baby Betty's in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, a Betty is leftover fruit or even applesauce or apple butter, pear butter, whatever you have growing in your orchard. I have nothing. I live in New York City, but I do go to the green market. With breadcrumbs, because not a heel of bread was wasted. I decided, well, I could do that with whole grain bread, but I usually have cake crumbs around.
Mm.
So I make my Betty with cake crumbs. cake crumbs.
And
it feels good because not only am I making desserts that are delicious with wholesome ingredients, but there's no waste. I don't like waste.
What I love about desserts with fruit, especially apples and pears, is it doesn't take much in addition to the fruit to make it feel like a dessert. And it's healthy. There's really nothing bad about those desserts.
That's
there's just
right.
like a dash of grain and a dash of sugar and a dash of fat, and it's really just the fruit that's enhanced by a little bit of these others.
That's right. That's right. And you want to taste your fruit because this is to taste. Some people prefer a more tart flavor. Other people like things sweeter. So that's up to you. But you can do any combination when there's no fresh fruit. You know, if I'm out of fresh fruit, which is a rare occurrence because I live alone, but I have a lot of fruits and vegetables in my house always. I keep unsulfured dried fruits in my pantry. You can rehydrate them and make a really wonderful fruit dessert. So if somebody's stopping by or you just get a craving and you really don't have time to do anything, you can reconstitute some dried fruit, maybe chop in an apple or a pear or an orange, whatever is in season. I want to use things that are seasonal.
Sure.
And put some of my granola on top. I have a wonderful granola in the book with no fat added, no sugar added, and no fat added. That was a situation where I thought, I bet I could just reduce some apple juice or apple cider and use that in place of any sweetener, and I did. And that really becomes healthy because we know we want pumpkin seeds. We want sesame seeds. And I say desserts are a treat. You don't get healthy eating dessert. But there's a range.
There are some things that feel like desserts that really are just good food. We have to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to come back, and when we do, I think we're going to talk more about what we should have in our pantries so that we're ready for anything, and some more wonderful dishes for Thanksgiving, and we'll see. Come right back, a couple of minutes.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hello, I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m. Please join us as we connect people, ideas, important information, and discover solutions to some of the most urgent problems facing us every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m., Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world, every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is John Rappaport inviting you to my new radio show on the Progressive Radio Network, which will air every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm an investigative reporter. I've spent 20 years researching health and medical fraud, deep politics. I'll have lots of very knowledgeable guests on the show who have information to share with you so that you can live a more healthy and informed life. Join me every Wednesday on PRN. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the John Rappaport Show. See you then.
Tune in to Cities Grace Notes, where we'll be bringing you inspired voices from around the world, creative voices from various fields and backgrounds, new sounds, new music, and new ideas with you every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi. Let me say it again. Hi. Welcome back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And we're talking about my favorite subject, food, and not just any food, but desserts. And I'm here with my friend, Chef Fran Costigan. And please check out her website at francostigan.com. And if you're looking for a great dessert cookbook, either for yourself to make some great treats for the holidays or as a stocking stuffer or a nice little gift for the holidays, this is a good one. More great, good dairy-free desserts by Fran Costigan.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you for mentioning the gift suggestion, because I have had people tell me that after they've served some dessert from my book to non-vegan friends who were quite relieved, oh, you can have some. You
right.
can have dessert.
Can
okay,
have
let's.
You can have chocolate.
You can have chocolate. Do you eat chocolate? Do you wear lipstick? You know, that kind of thing. That they get the book. And I want you all to know that on my website, francostigan.com, is a link to my email address. Any questions, feel free to ask me. If you follow the recipes, your desserts will surely come out just the way they should, which is delicious, absolutely, uncompromisingly delicious. We don't want to hear this is good for what it is. We just want to hear this is really good.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit. You mentioned a little bit about history with Thanksgiving and what the colonists were doing and how they were using fruit that was just about to go bad, and they got creative and made these wonderful treats. There's a difficult part of Thanksgiving, and I don't want to not mention it, although we don't have to talk about it for too long because it's not very pleasant. But Thanksgiving is one of my favorite holidays. It may be my favorite. I love the idea of giving thanks and being grateful for abundance. And some of the foods, the traditional foods, are my favorite foods for Thanksgiving. Who doesn't love mashed potatoes and brown gravy, apple pie and pumpkin pie and cornbread, all those great starchy foods? I don't eat a lot of starch, but for a holiday, big meal, it's fine. And but then there's that centerpiece that so many people feel is important, the turkey. And I talked a little bit about it on my other show on Sunday, but originally the Thanksgiving holiday wasn't centered around the turkey. Now, I wasn't there, but my understanding is it was a celebration of the harvest.
That's right. That's right. I don't really understand how this happened. Marketing?
Yeah. So when people really want to get traditional, it's a focus on vegetables that's important, not a focus on a exploited, tortured, dead bird.
Yeah.
And just a word about turkeys. They're not dumb. They feel pain. They're very kind. There are wonderful stories about them and their intelligence and their sensitivity. And the majority of birds today, probably more than 99%, are raised in confinement. They live in filth, in their own excrement. They're bred so that they're top-heavy, so that they have large breasts, which gives them a lot of white meat, which people tend to prefer. And they can't walk because they're so out of balance. In addition, when they're born, their beaks are cut off with a hot implement. Of course, they're not given any anesthesia. And three of their toes are cut off as well, so they can barely walk As it is, they're top-heavy and their feet are now deformed, and this is so they don't hurt each other in the horrifically confined conditions that they're in. Plus, they're fed oftentimes things that aren't really considered food, and it's just a really miserable thing. And so when we're giving thanks, why do we want to have this as a centerpiece? It just doesn't make any sense.
You know, Karen, it doesn't make sense.
And people will say, because it tastes good, because I like it.
You know, I remember, I started eating a vegan diet 25 years ago. I've been celebrating Thanksgiving for a lot longer than that. I don't recall anybody ever saying the turkey tastes good, the gravy tastes good, or, you know, baste the turkey, put stuff on it. I just don't recall.
Well, I have to confess, when I was young, I gave up meat when I was a teenager, but when I was young and we would go out on the weekends for a restaurant meal, and that was back in the days when people cooked at home most of the time and knew where their kitchen was and what was in it. And going out to a restaurant was a treat. I frequently ordered the turkey dinner. And I would say things like, trying to sound really wise, I would say, oh, turkey's been good this year. I was like 8 or 9 when I said
that.
That's
cute.
Now when I think about it, it's not something that I can eat. And it doesn't taste good just because I'm at a point where I know what it is. I know how horrifically cruel it is. Cruelty doesn't taste good to me.
It doesn't taste good. It doesn't taste good. And if people would just understand it, and there's that, it looks like a bird. A lot of our meat doesn't look like, have any resemblance to the animal. But here's, you know, we're talking about legs and breasts and wings. I'll tell you what I want for Thanksgiving. I want some, I love breasts. I love all the sides. I love
Brussels sprouts.
I love roasted Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. Love it. I like sweet potatoes and squash and cranberry relish. These are foods that really were always vegan. I never liked the taste of butter much. I always had stomach aches, so it turned out, well, no kidding, I was lactose intolerant. Who isn't? Do you know my mother served ice cream to me for breakfast? She was so worried that I wasn't drinking milk, and I was a pretty obedient kid. I had ice cream for breakfast, and then I didn't like eggs either. I mean, I just remember stomach aches. So, of course, I had these maltitz with a raw egg gag. I always gravitated to the things I like, gravy. There's a great cornbread recipe in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, really simple, quite savory. So I like it plain. I like it in the stuffing. I like chestnuts. I'm getting really hungry.
Yeah. Oh, chestnuts are wonderful. And for some reason, here in the United States, we don't really push the savory chestnut dishes. I lived in France for 4 years, and it's quite popular. And it's such a delicious food. It's nutty and
smoky,
creamy. It has really many dimensions to its flavor. And
I think so.
Great.
And they're easier to find now. You can find cooked, steamed whole chestnuts. I like to buy them and just throw them into the oven and peel them. That's really fun. I taught an ethnic class last week. We did a baklava, pistachio baklava.
I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Yummy.
Makrut, which is a semolina cake. And with an orange flower, water, syrup. And, oh my gosh, we made a lot of desserts. It's hard for me to remember now. But one of them was a castagnaccio, which is a typical Italian dessert made with nothing but chestnut flour, fresh, needs to be fresh, water, olive oil, pinoli, raisins, that depends what town you're from, and rosemary.
Wow.
So you could say that it's an acquired taste.
Sounds good to me.
It's so good, and it's so easy. But there's this depth of flavor, you know, the smokiness from the chestnuts. That was so interesting.
You mentioned pine nuts, pinoli.
Yes.
And I love them. They're the They can be pricey sometimes.
They are pricey.
They're right now they're exceptionally expensive,
yeah.
But there are times when you can catch them and they're not too expensive. But you have a great recipe for a grape.
Oh,
pie.
The grape tart
grape
with
tart.
The pinoli with the pine nut. And the pine nuts there are just a garnish, but they add a wonderful kind of say buttery. And that's a really simple tart. It's a cornmeal crust. My recipes are really component recipes. I do hope that people will follow the recipes. I mean, I get very few emails where people are telling me that they weren't happy with the result. But that's generally where they say, well, I took out the flour.
Oops.
And I used whatever. You know, the sweeteners that I choose, there's a reason. Our sweeteners have particular qualities, or we have to get to know how to use them. When I took out the white sugar, certainly we have granulated sweeteners and liquid sweeteners, and it's clear there would be a difference.
They're very different.
But even in the liquid sweetener category, for example, we're talking about Thanksgiving. Well, the colonists called maple syrup and maple sugar Indian sugar. I love that because I'm also looking at, well, what is natural? What is whole? This was always used as a sweetener. It's a sweetener.
It's a good, yummy sweetener.
And maple sugar is just maple syrup with the water boiled off. I've made it. I tested it.
Okay, we're not talking about these pancake syrups made from high fructose corn syrup. No, thank you.
And caramel color. That's like, you know, soy sauce. That's caramel
now,
color
maple
water.
Maple syrup is expensive.
Yes, it is. However, the good news is, honest, truly, you can see it in the stores now. The price is coming down quite dramatically. And you can find it bulk. So get a couple of gallons, even. Share it with your friends. Not only doesn't go bad, you can put it in your freezer. It doesn't freeze solid. It's more like vodka. It becomes more viscous.
Mm.
But I buy it in quantity when I see that there's a good price. I like to use grade B, which is a darker maple syrup.
Right.
And occasionally grade A, dark amber. The lighter maples are more expensive, but the flavor isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wonderful sweetener. And, you know, I don't ever tell people that they're going to get healthy eating dessert. You get healthy eating your foods, your
green vegetables.
Green vegetables, Karen. Karen's
kale,
got me drinking
collard.
Green. But there are some benefits. I'm using whole wheat pastry flour, which slows down the digestion. And the whole sweeteners, the sweeteners that have not been refined, do retain some fiber and some minerals. And there was just, maple is becoming quite popular again. There was a wonderful article about non-vegan, but let's see, I can figure out how to veganize them. Maple desserts in a recent Bon Appetit. Now, I had an interesting telephone call from a friend of mine, a food writer friend, who is not vegan but has become interested. I think her boyfriend was told to cut out cholesterol.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there is no cholesterol in anything.
In plant foods. In
never was.
Foods,
never was.
Right.
So those labels on your olive oil and maple syrup, it's a marketing thing. There never was. But she picked up some sorghum syrup at the farmer's market on Saturday, and it was being touted as the third highest antioxidant food in the plant world. So I said, well, Jennifer, here's the good news and here's the bad news. Sorghum is a cereal grass and was really a popular crop early on in this country. And our good friends at the farm in Summertown, Tennessee, actually were growing sorghum a way to make some money. It's a sweetener has molasses-like notes, but it's different. A little bit lighter than molasses. Have you ever tasted it?
Mm-mm.
It's yummy. So I keep it in the refrigerator. I don't want it to ferment. And it is a high antioxidant food. However, to say that, you know, when people hear something like that, well, maybe you'd have to eat two cakes made with sorghum to get the amount of antioxidants that you would get.
Mm-hmm.
You follow my drift here.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been very happy with it. I'm using sorghum flour as part of a gluten-free flour mix now. It adds a nice sweetness, and it's really pretty readily available. She told me she made the spice cake in my book, which calls for molasses, with sorghum, and it was great. Mm-hmm. So I get all this wonderful information from people who's, you know, are trying different things. It's it always was what it was, and I like that. You know, dark whole cane juice. Well, what is that? It's the whole sugar cane that's been crushed, and the liquid is there, and then it's granulated. Well, in other cultures, they know that. There's hapadora in South. You probably can say that better than I can. In South America, and jaggery.
Hapadora, jaggery.
And all kinds of interesting sugars where you taste the molasses. I didn't use molasses for years because molasses is a byproduct of sugar refining. And when you're not using organic sugar, then that's really the dregs. And that's where all the herbicides and pesticides are concentrated. Now, Wholesome Sweeteners makes a beautiful organic molasses.
It has more iron in it than conventional molasses.
Yes. I really like their products.
You know what I like? I don't do this enough, but when I think about it, I think, oh, I should do this more often. But like a teaspoon of molasses in a cup of hot water is just a really nice beverage.
It is.
And if you're having problems with iron, what a great way to enhance the amount of iron you're eating.
Yeah. And I think that cultures knew this, you know, before we were bombarded with the jelly bellies and high fructose corn syrup. I had a group in my classroom. We divide into groups, and I had three lovely women who said, identified themselves as the Latinas. We are the Latina group, they said. And one of the Latinas was actually from Buenos Aires and Israel. Very interesting mix. So they asked to make the dulce de leche and the flan in class. Well, they saw there were some leftover bananas and asked me, could they sauté them? I said, absolutely. And they chose to sauté them in molasses. They said that would be more traditional in their country, that this was a dessert. A banana sautéed, sometimes in butter, but none of them wanted any butter. We got the pan really hot. We got the molasses really hot. They cut the bananas on a long diagonal, and it was fantastic.
Wow.
Fantastic. So potassium and iron. Right
yummy.
There. Yummy, right? And the flan. And the dulce de leche was so good.
So where do we find recipes for these things?
Well, those are being taught right now in my classes, and there's something else coming up. Stay tuned.
We are expecting a new book from you.
We're working on it.
Right,
yes.
But there's a lot of work to be put into it.
Oh, yes.
And the thing is, many cookbooks that people try, the recipes don't always work out. That's because they're not really tested very well. But that's not the case with your books.
I really test carefully. I feel very responsible, for one thing. And my recipes are tested by me several times. I send them out to other people. I don't really like to say there's a little bit of wiggle room because I want people to be careful, but, you know, my classes are a testing ground, so by the time they get into an article that I've published or a book, they're really well tested. I love in a class to assign at least two groups the same recipe because it's a great illustration about measuring.
Mm-hmm.
Invariably, one comes out great and the other not so great, and it's the same recipe.
Wow. So tell me about your classes. Where are they? What are they? How can people find out about them?
I have a list of my classes on my website, francostigan.com. You just click on the schedule. I teach at the Natural Gourmet Institute on 21st Street in New York City, primarily. I teach at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City on 23rd Street. And I do travel teach, and I do private classes as well. Most of my classes are 4 hours long, so it's a one-session class, generally speaking. But I do twice a year, occasionally three times a year, a vegan baking boot camp intensive, which has been the most fun.
And people aren't just from New York. who come to these classes.
The least. I want to put a map up on my wall and put pins in because it's so exciting. Let's see. Well, I've had students from Japan, Korea, China. We were profiled in a Japanese magazine, as a matter of fact, from Israel, all over South America, Turkey. Oh, I just had a review of my cookbook on a blog from Germany yesterday, so I've had some people from Germany.
Excellent.
And everyone from absolute beginners, which are welcome, but, you know, some people come in to a five-day-long course and say, oh, that's a stove or an oven. And I've also had the pastry chef from Taiwan in Paris. So they're all ranges of people. Some are vegan. Some are not. People have allergies. People are lactose intolerant, or someone in their family is. People are coming into their restaurant. Or their doctor said, cut out, you know, you need to watch your cholesterol. Whatever. Or curious. Just want to eat. Still want to know that they can have dessert. But eat a more healthful diet. And you know, Karen, I'm seeing people who care about the environment. And they're coming to learn vegan desserts because they know that it's better for the environment to eat a plant-based diet.
Wow. Yeah. Let's just touch on that. We have a few minutes left, but a lot of people don't connect the dots there. So, you know, what's in dessert that isn't good for the environment? And there's a number of things. So let's first talk about dairy.
Yes.
Cows. Dairy cows in particular are one of the contributing factors to global warming today. The methane gas from the cows contributes significantly to global warming, not just the cows that are grown for beef. And that's one thing. The way the cows are raised, the water that's used to grow the plants to feed the cows, we use a lot of it from natural aquifers underground, and we're pumping them out at alarming rates. That water was created from the Ice Age and other great events from millions of years ago, not easily replaced. We're also polluting a lot of that water with the pesticides that are used to grow the plants, to feed those animals. It gets into the water supply. It's not a pretty picture. Animal agriculture is one of the major contributors, if not the major contributor, to environmental devastation.
Well, the UN certainly agrees.
Fortunately, we're starting to see some major organizations realize this and publish some really interesting reports.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, when I changed my diet 25 years ago, it wasn't as easy to go into the market and find substitutions, but today it's a snap.
Oh, my God,
it's
so easy.
Organic, I mean, and again, I really urge people to use organic ingredients because you know then that they are not genetically modified and they're grown without herbicides and pesticides. But you've got soy milk, almond milk, rice milk, hemp milk. It goes on and on. And I've been making my own rice milk lately. Mm. It's so easy. It's so economical. This goes, again, to the cost factor. You buy some brown rice, organic brown rice, cook it till it's mushy, or use leftover rice, add some more water. I use a standard blender because not everybody out there is going to have a high-speed blender.
Yep.
They're nice
to
have.
I use a standard one,
but
too.
I use a standard one. I add water, fresh water, to my brown rice. I strain it twice, maybe, and I save what's in the strainer is my brown rice cream cereal. So I really feel great about this. Add some vanilla. Add a little sweetener if I want to. My favorite is to make a chai-flavored rice milk. But I mean, here you go. You've got rice milk. Of course you can buy it, and of course I have it in my pantry. But you can make your own rice milk. You can make your own nut milk.
I make almond milk.
Yeah, and I've been making oat milk lately. So it's great. It's great. And then everyone can eat your dessert. You don't have to worry about the lactose environment. Plus what Karen said about the environment and the dairy cows is so, so important. I don't use junk, though. I didn't use, you know, I really want to focus on high-quality ingredients. I didn't use margarine when I was working as a traditional pastry chef. I really don't use it now. I'm using a lot more olive oil. Extra virgin olive oil, particularly the Spanish oil, arbequina. It's got notes of almonds and citrus. So there's a quality fat. It's a fat and a flavor. In a chocolate, you don't notice it. In a biscotti, in my book, I was preferring to use neutral oils, like a neutral canola oil, for example. But I started thinking, well, that would be great in the almond anise biscotti to use olive oil. And I've been using more olive oil, which is a really heart healthy oil and works beautifully.
Well, I do use some of the vegan margarines from time to time.
Yeah, but there's a place.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I like keeping it as minimally processed as possible. And I want to talk a little bit more about the environment just really quickly because, again, it's so important to connect the dots. Sugar, chocolate, coffee. These are called commodity foods.
Yes.
And much of them are grown in third world countries. And the landowners want to get the most bang from their acreage. And so they grow these commodity foods that are exported and sent to the first world countries, like our country, for the affluent to buy and fill all our gluttonous desires. And then, unfortunately, there's a lot of people in poverty, and they don't even have enough food to eat because a lot of the land is used for our treats. And this is why it's really important. I mean, there's so many reasons why you want to buy organic and fair trade. But if you're going to indulge, and there's no reason not to, these foods should be grown organically, and the farmers should be paid a healthy living wage. It's just good all around.
It is. It is good all around. And it really makes a tremendous difference to people.
I think in summary we can say that desserts are good, and you should enjoy them, and do your best to make them from wholesome ingredients, buy quality ingredients, plant-based, organic, fair trade.
And store them properly. These ingredients are not refined, so we want to keep our nuts and seeds and flowers in the refrigerator or the freezer. And, Karen, I think we should have some biscotti.
Oh. That sounds good. I'm going to crunch here on a little biscotti.
But it is true about storing our ingredients correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy.
And enjoy
without
them.
Guilt.
You know, even if you're not going to have a treat that's healthy when you're eating it, enjoy it. You should never be saying to yourself, oh, my God, I shouldn't be having this. It's so bad for me. It's so terrible. No. When you're eating whatever it is, enjoy it.
Enjoy
it.
Bon appetit.
Bon appetit. Have a great holiday. And here I go with a lovely biscotti by Fran Costigan. Thanks for joining us. Crunch. We'll be right back.